This meeting is now being recorded.
Greetings, everyone. Welcome to the GDPR Technical Study Group. This is our first meeting. It's on Tuesday, December 11th, 2018, from 1700 to 1900 UTC. We have apologies from Jody Kolker. And attending today's meeting, we have Ram, Jorge, Gavin, Murray, Scott, Andy, Steve, Tofumi, and Benedict. And if there was somebody here that I missed, please, you can go ahead and put it in the chat, and I'll be sure to add you to the roll. From the ICANN organization, we have Diana, Aliza. I'm not sure if John Crane has made it in as of yet. We have Francisco and myself, Yvette. We would like to remind you that today's meeting is being recorded, so when you are speaking, please state your name clearly so that we may capture it on the recording. Okay, I think that about does it for me. So, Ram, I will go ahead and turn the meeting back over to you.
Thank you, Yvette. I appreciate it, and thanks, everyone, for making it on the call, and more importantly, making it on the call on time. That's really, really impressive, and I appreciate all of you coming in. I think this is the first time you actually get to see who are the others who I've invited into this technical study group. I'll just go through... Before I go through the people and all of that, I first wanted to say thank you for all of you for agreeing to volunteer your time. You know, I left the ICANN board a couple of months ago, and on my way out, Yoran tapped me on the shoulder and said, you know, there is a little bit of work that has to be done in the technical area as far as access to non-public registration data is concerned. And would you consider convening such a group and chairing such a group? So I considered it, and I said, sounds like an interesting thing. There were only two things that I asked Yoran. One, I didn't want this to be one of those ICANN, you know, 6-month, 9-month, 12-month projects that stretches on interminably. I wanted it to be fairly time-bound. And the second was, I said I wanted this to have to be a team, and Yoran completely agreed, wanted to be a team that was focused on the technical expertise rather than the other aspects, because that really is what we're trying to do. Now, all of you who are on this call, Diana, I think, has already given you access to the Google Drive, and today I thought what we should. And if you don't, I think a couple of you are yet to have Google Drive. You have to associate your email addresses to Google. I think it's Tomofumi and Andy are the two from my reports that haven't done that, at least as of a few days ago. But we're going to be using Google Drive, and this particular work, I think quite a bit of it has to be done collaboratively and online. I am currently in the drive. I'm also looking at the draft charter as well as the calendar and timeline, because we're going to go through both of those on the call today. Before I get much deeper into this, just a little bit of what we're trying to do here and what we're not trying to do here. This is not a boil the ocean group. This is primarily a group that is focused on exploring technical solutions that might exist for authentication, authorization, and related areas, as well as providing access to non-public registration data for third parties who have legitimate interests. So that's the specific focus here. But and the most important piece here are the words technical solutions. We're not looking to do policy. If there are policy areas that come up, we certainly need to be acknowledging it, and then we make a note of it, but we're not a policy deciding body. We do have to, I think, try to think about what impact might occur as a result of a policy position being taken one way or the other, and think about how to implement the technology in that area, or how to create some technical solutions in that area. But that's there's quite a bit of topics in this particular area that are going to be out of bailiwick for us. They're going to be not things that we decide upon or potentially even focus our time upon. So that is at a fairly high level what we're trying to do. I am going to ask if Yvette or if Diana, perhaps you could post a link to the Google Team Drive on the chat, as well as perhaps a link to both the charter and the calendar on the Google Drive. I think that might be helpful. A couple of other things. What is my role and what am I going to be doing with this group? I'm really here not only to convene but also to engage. I am expecting that this is going to be a proper deep technical discussions and design discussions, and so I look forward to participating in that way. I will end up working with all of you to arrive at what is feasible, what is reasonable, and what is appropriate. There are a couple of things that, when I spoke to Yoran, there are a couple of things that I was fairly clear about. I said that we should not be compromising on what is the right kinds of technical solutions, because there is a short time frame running here. It's a common thing that happens in tech, as all of you know, where the deadline decides design. It's not that we should not be cognizant of deadlines, but that we really ought to be focusing on both timeliness and correctness rather than other aspects. At least that's where my head's oriented. That's what I'm looking to do. The second thing is the timetable itself. We're setting a fairly demanding timetable of what we are trying to do here and how we are trying to get through and create a cadence that hopefully is a cadence that we can keep up with and we can carry on with. But I would like to get your feedback on the cadence and the work plan as well. In addition, I've thought through and put just for discussion here in our group a charter as well as some deliverables. I'd love to get your feedback on that. A couple of other administrative or how we function type of details. I'm really hoping we'll be a collegial group, but at the same time, as technologists, we're just going to be truthful and be candid, and if somebody comes up with a stupid idea, we ought to say that's a stupid idea rather than saying you're stupid for coming up with this idea, right? So focus on the issues rather than the individuals. That's one thing. The second thing is that my intention here is to do in the normal technical development area, which is to drive things by consensus rather than by voting. I don't see that voting is going to be very productive in an area like this. So that's kind of the path that I'm looking for us to get to. One of the other questions that has come up to me already and is likely to come up to all of you once you're all named publicly is, A, how did you get picked? And B, what was the rationale? What was Ram thinking or what was ICANN thinking in picking various people? So I wanted to just walk through at a very high level how we came up with names and what we did there. And in this this was a collaborative effort between driven by me and with assistance provided by Francisco and by John Crane. But what we did was we were looking at six areas of skills expertise that we thought was important. One was the RDAP protocol itself. The other was experience in building protocols and doing technical design. some distributed authentication technologies, authorization technologies, distributed systems architecture, as well as governance, systems design, systems as well as design thinking. So those were the general skills that I was looking at on the one hand. On the other side of the matrix was I was looking at folks who have got registry operation experience, registrar experience, experience from the point of view of a client or a client users, and then as well as folks who've been RDAP implementers. So those were the, if you imagine a matrix, that's how the X and the Y axis got formed. And that led to kind of a natural selection, at least from my perspective, of each one of you. I don't know if all of you know each other, so let me just go through very briefly. Scott Hollenbeck, Senior Director at VeriSign, Gavin Brown, CTO at CentralNIC, both are registry organizations. Jody Kolker is software engineer at GoDaddy, a registrar. Murray is a production engineer at Facebook. Tomofumi is a distinguished engineer at DigiCert. Andy Newton is chief engineer at Aaron. Jorge is the research team leader at Nick Mexico. Steve Crocker is the CEO of Shinkuro Inc. And Benedict Addis is with Shadow Server, registrar of last resort. But also, Benedict, for me, the one of the things was that he used to be a technical officer at the National Cybercrime Unit and the United Kingdom's National Crime Agency, so there is a law enforcement connection there that was also useful. These are the folks who I have invited into this technical study group. There are a few other people who have written to me and who have asked to be let into this group, so to speak. A couple of them have been lawyers. A couple of them have been engineers who are working for the intellectual property constituency. And my responses so far to all of them have been that we're just getting started. And, you know, we have a set of skills, and we are – I have picked people based on filling those skills, that skills matrix. If you find gaps – then I think we'll have to go back and look at who else might be appropriate to add in. For example, right now I think we are dependent almost solely on Jody from the registrar to provide a registrar experience or the registrar story, if you will. So it might be interesting to see if there is somebody technical from other registrars who might be interested in joining into this group. So that kind of walks you through the kind of the rationale that that went through how I picked and who I picked. And why don't I stop here for a moment and ask if there are any questions. Scott?
Ram, yes, Scott Hollenbeck here. So on the question of decision making, you talked about a desire to use consensus rather than voting, but I mean, I could see us eventually getting to a situation, you know, given a small number of people, that it's somewhat difficult to establish exactly where consensus lies. How do you propose to deal with disagreements in the absence of clear consensus?
Good question, Scott. I don't really have a clear answer on that. I guess I'm laying out my aspirations that we might be able to get to consensus. But you're right. We will, I think, get to a point, to some points where we may not get consensus. And in the back of my mind is this idea, Scott, that we will then kind of go to a rough consensus model rather than a full consensus model, so that we still have, without actually resorting to a formal yes-no vote, we kind of, you know, take a read of the room. My big issue, Scott, is if we're going to find some issues where the technical yes or no is not a binary answer, and the you know, it's then primarily a design choice, and I'm hoping that we can talk our way through the design choices at that point. But my expectation is consensus falling back on rough consensus. Does that answer your question?
Sure does. Thank you.
Thanks. Benedict? You're on mute, Benedict. Steve.
Thank you. So first of all, thank you for inviting me. I'm pleased to be here, and I'm looking forward to great success. My understanding is that the focus of this group is to develop the technical framework for supporting whatever policies might be decided in another forum, and that's fine. One key question is to make sure that the technical framework that we do develop will in fact support whatever policies might be chosen. So I think, at least from my perspective, it's important to have an understanding of what the space of those policies might be and use that to test whether or not the framework that we are going to try to arrive at will be adequate to do that. Otherwise, we may have a classic mismatch between what we develop and what might be needed later.
Agree. Benedict?
Hello. One of the odd things about working on the EPDP is the amount of public scrutiny and the sort of blog posts and media flying around it. Can you discuss this?
Benedict, you kind of broke up, but my understanding is that you're looking at how are we going to be publishing or exposing our work. The idea here is tomorrow we'll make an announcement that we have begun work, and I don't want to yet post the full charter until we discuss it, so hopefully we'll get a little bit of time to discuss it today. But the intention will be to actually make public both the overall calendar as well as the charter as quickly as possible. Now, we're going to be recording these calls, but in my mind, these recordings are for our internal use rather than for the world to listen into and then opine on it as well. But that's just my thought process. If you all think that that's a bad idea, I'd love to hear from you on that. I just feel like we've got a short time frame, we've got a defined task, but not a small task. So I just feel like, you know, we need to keep the number of distractions low. But having said that, you know, I think we do need to have some mechanism by which we can, if we get to a draft specification of some sort, by which we can perhaps review this or have this made available in the community or something like that. I haven't thought through exactly what's the best mechanism for it. At the end of the day, I look at what we're going to be doing as non-binding in any way. In any case, we're going to come up with hopefully useful materials that can be leveraged by, you know, everybody else in the community. But I'm hoping to keep this relatively drama-free and generally intended to be very focused on our task. In terms of politics or taking heat, et cetera, I'm expecting that most of it will be dealt by me, and Yoran will take all of the blame and you'll get all of the credit for the work. Does that answer your question, Benedict?
Beautifully, thank you.
Okay, great. Steve, I think the intention, you had a question in the chat about calls every Tuesday. I think when we go through the calendar review, we'll go through timing as well as duration of each call. And if you access the Google Calendar, you will see the timing of the duration of each call tentatively is already listed in the calendar. Any other questions on this kind of administrative or the organizational part of this meeting? Okay, none. Let's move to the next topic, which is the calendar and the cadence, what we're trying to do. This is, of course, our first meeting. My intention is that we hold a call every week on Tuesdays. Most of the calls will run about 60 minutes. With some calls that are prior to some larger event, perhaps extending to 90 or 120 minutes, but the intent is to get to a Tuesday cadence. We'll pick a time. If this particular time, which is 1700 UTC, if that works for all of you, then perhaps we could finalize on that time. And what I'd appreciate is if anybody has an objection to a 1700 start time, if you have chat, type it into the chat. If not, just raise your hand to speak. But if you have an objection, please speak up. Otherwise, we could, I think, just pick a 1700 UTC start time every Tuesday for the Tuesdays that are listed on the calendar. Okay, I see Scott saying yes on this. All right, great. There are a couple of things that we need to understand and you need to know. We had developed along with Elisa and Diana and Francisco and John and myself. We had sat down and we put together what could be what should the calendar have and when should we do what. And we thought that one of the important things was to have a face-to-face meeting in January. We've tentatively penciled in January 15th and 16th, a Tuesday and Wednesday, at the ICANN Washington, D.C. offices. We've secured the location. We've secured the spot there. We just have to make sure that there is not going to be some unavoidable conflict for many of you. We will, of course, that call will still be available on the phone and it will be a recording, etc. So if you absolutely cannot make it in person, you should be able to dial in. But I'm strongly in favor of a face-to-face in that kind of early stages of what we're trying to do. Potentially in February, there might be another face-to-face meeting. That is just again penciled in, and that one is penciled in for 3 days rather than two, because I'm hoping that we may have a draft specification at that point. Now, that might just be my, getting a group started optimism speaking rather than reality, but we'll have to reassess this as time goes on. A couple of other events that you should know about. There is, of course, in March, the ICANN 16-4 meeting in Kobe from the 9th to the 14th, and then the IETF in Prague, 23rd through the 29th. So we're not scheduling anything during that week or in the week intervening those two. And I'm hoping that we actually wrap up in April. And if you look at the draft, I'll get to the draft charter, but there's a very important step 14 that I'm hoping we will be able to take care of in April. There are a couple of other things that have come to my attention since this timetable got put together that I wanted to bring to your attention. This had to do with, speaking with Yoran a little bit and looking at, what timeline works, how this timeline works for other things that he is looking to do. And Elisa, I'm wondering whether you could just walk the group through some of the feedback that we've received from Yoran so we can bring that in, expose this to the group, and then I can solicit their thoughts on it.
Sure, happy to. Hi, everyone. This is Elisa Gopian. I don't think I know many of you. I work for Teresa Swinehart on the Multi-Stakeholder Strategy and Strategic Initiatives team, the longest team name at ICANN. Both Diana and myself helped Teresa to manage all of our strategic related initiatives on GDPR. So that's how we came to this project. So with that in mind, part of the idea behind forming this group at this point, Joran's thinking behind this was to have some more meat on the bones, as it were, for this technical solution that we first that he first raised on our webinar we held in October. Some of the timing constraints that he has in mind and that may, you know, might be a bit complicated for this group to tackle is, first, a meeting the week of January 7th. Joran will be in Brussels, where he'll be meeting with members of the European Commission, and he'd really like to have as much information from this group as possible at that point. So enough to start discussing some of these technical solutions and, you know, providing a bit more detail to see what's actually, whether these are things that may, in fact, diminish the legal liability for the contracted parties in implementing some type of a unified access model. That's the terminology we've been using so far. So that's one sort of date. The other was he was really hoping to have a near final spec by the week of ICANN 63 in Kobe. You know, I think we're all in agreement that having a public engagement session at that point to at least get some feedback from the community on whatever this group proposes would be useful, but that feedback would then turn into turn over pretty quickly into a final version shortly after the Kobe meeting. So those are kind of two dates that he's highlighted for us that he would like us to work toward. But again, recognizing that time is short and we're coming up on the end of the year when a lot of people will be on holiday, I know these will be challenges, but I'd like to at least bring those to the attention of this group. Thanks,
Aliza. I appreciate it. The first thing that comes to my mind is that if you look at the calendar and look at Joran's meeting with the European Commission in Brussels, I'm not sure that as a group we will have produced something that he can necessarily go and speak to. So I think I'll spend some time with Joran trying to understand what the key issues that he's got there are, and seeing if there is a message that can be crafted that comes out of any work that we do. But I think that at best what he might be able to do is to say that there is a group, it is working on this, and here is maybe he can point to the charter at that point. But we'll kind of, you know, put a pin in it, and we'll come back to that. As far as the ICANN 64 Kobe, you know, having a spec ready for review in Kobe, I just don't know. That's part of the reason why I proposed having a 3-day meeting face to face in February. But some of these things have to do with getting the right people in the right space with enough time to cogitate over these kinds of issues. So it's not that you cannot, it's not an unfeasible task, but it's something that we just have to keep in mind. One other thing that I forgot to mention is that we have asked for a 2-hour slot, or sorry, a 90-minute slot to present whatever we have done up to that point at the ICANN Kobe meeting. And in addition to that, we've also asked for a 2-hour meeting slot in Kobe after the public workshop is done, so that as a team we can come together and listen to any feedback that community members may have and see if that affects our thinking in what this framework might be. So that's in Kobe, and if some of you want to be there at that meeting in Kobe, there will be travel funding available to be there, is my understanding. I think that actually covers the calendar topic on the agenda. Any questions? Murray.
So both of the weeks that you picked for in-person meetings, unfortunately, I've had conflict with, for the February one, I'll already be traveling, and for the January one, both my wife and I can't be away at the same time, so if there's an opportunity to move those around, I mean, I realize I'm one of 10, and I don't expect the me, but if there's consensus to move, there's consensus again, then I'd be all for discussing an alternative.
Thanks, Murray. Let me just get to January 1st. Is that entire week out for you?
Yes.
Okay. But you don't have a problem in the weeks prior or after. I had scheduled it in the middle of January, folks, mostly because I thought maybe scheduling it the earlier week, the week of the 8th and the 9th, the week of the 6th, if you will, that might be just a little too much. You know, we could potentially schedule, and I have another conflict on that week, 7th, 8th, and 9th. I have something else that I'm doing. Why don't we do this, instead of discussing what might be alternatives here, Diana, can you take an action to set up a doodle poll and suggest in the poll perhaps a meeting on the 10th and 11th of January and also a meeting on the, let's say, the 24th. 4th and the 25th of January for a January meeting, and then for February, the only thing I can think of is a week after, the week of the 17th, you know, make it 19th through the 21st. If you could put a doodle poll out, and then we can see where the group arrives at. Murray, I hope that addresses your concern. At least
that's the most democratic thing to do, I suppose. So thank you.
Okay. Any other comments on the calendar? All right. Let's go next to the most important piece of today's call, which has to do with a discussion of the scope as well as a discussion of the charter. What I would like to do is, you know, kind of move this meeting now from me just talking to having this, you know, convert into a kind of an open discussion amongst us. We can use Adobe Chat for Q&A or for lining up questions, but beyond that. In terms of scope, I thought that we have to be fairly careful about what we are going to be doing and not doing. For example, there is already an RDAP working group inside of ICANN. There is the EPDP group, and they have a specific scope and a specific set of things that they're doing. So I thought it was important that we are clear about what we want to limit our scope to. My thought process was that, as Steve had said earlier, the primary job here is to try and arrive at a technical framework that could be used to allow for access to non-public registration data for third parties. I mean, that's kind of the primary thing, but the focus would be on the technical side. Now, there are a couple of folks who've come to me and who've said, how could you start this work before first doing an exhaustive user requirement study? You know, and you have to go and poll every group that is using, RDDS registration data, and until you understand what all the users need, you can't actually begin the work. So I pose that as a question for you all to opine upon. The second question that I'd also like to pose to you is, there are some others who come to me and said, you're really going to produce a technical spec? How can you reasonably expect to produce a technical specification when the policy landscape is shifting so rapidly? What kind of a document are you actually going to be delivering? Is this going to be something that has, actual calls in it and a protocol, et cetera, or are we talking about something that is more high-level, kind of a design specification type of a document rather than a technical specification type of a document? So those are two questions that have been raised. I'd love to get your thoughts on that. Murray.
So two things leap to mind right away, just for the sake of getting discussion going. Whatever document we produce, in my view, the goal here is to remove the technology as an obstacle to whatever policy ICANN is going to deliver. I've heard that things like RDAP can't do this or RDAP can't do that, and we were pretty careful to try to make sure when we developed RDAP that it is able to handle arbitrary authentication models. And so I'm curious to know what obstacles people think RDAP is putting up to whatever policy there might be, and then produce basically a technical response to that saying, actually, these things are enabled in these ways, and therefore we are not the blocking factor. So I don't know that we necessarily need to produce a framework. I mean, we could, but at the moment I'm just curious to know what is it people think is missing from RDAP? What did we not think of when we developed it that would that is an obstacle to operation here?
Okay, thanks. You said two things, Murray. There was only one.
This coffee isn't working. I'll get the other one back to you.
Okay. Scott?
Scott Hollenbeck here. Hey, Murray, I don't mind answering part of your question because I have long been one of the people standing up and saying that there are things that we didn't include in core RDAP that are really needed to address, the ongoing policy questions here. Going back to what we have in core RDAP in terms of client identification and authentication, you'll recall that it's, essentially HTTPS, digest, mode, usernames and passwords, right? And as a large registry operator, who may have to respond to authenticated queries, that particular authentication mechanism just does not scale very well for us.
Okay.
The idea of having to assign usernames and passwords to millions of people, with whom we have no formal business relationship, and dealing with the never-ending flood of, hey, I forgot my password, types of customer service requests, just really doesn't work very well. And so, one of the things I've been working on since then is a federated authentication model, that allows communities of interest, to deal with the question of, who is who and, how they are authenticated and, the management of credentials and so on and so forth. So, I agree with what you're saying, though. I think that we can get to a point where we can identify appropriate technologies that are necessary to address many of the open questions. And ultimately, what I'd like to do is be able to give the policy developers a menu in which they can choose and say, look, these are the things that are available to you, and these are some of your choices. Now, please pick, or fill in the gaps in a couple of these places. And if you can do that, you will have technology that meets your needs.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I think that I might be overgeneralizing work that I haven't really touched in a couple of years. And I certainly don't want to foist upon you a username and password scheme that then you have to maintain at the scale we're talking about. What I remember of RDAP, and I guess I better go refresh myself a little more than I have, is that we basically said this is built on top of HTTP, and therefore you get all of the authentication mechanisms that HTTP can provide. And that includes things like federated authentication, which we have now. And so I don't think we're disagreeing at all here. I just think that RDAP may have said things like username, password, which clearly don't scale. But in my head, there's a more general solution, which is that we have this entire massive, highly scalable authentication framework to capitalize on. And in my head, that's where we left RDAP. You might be correct that we unfortunately scaled it down a little bit, but I don't think that there is a big obstacle here. But we just need to say that the way to do what everybody's talking about is something more comprehensive like what you're describing.
Yep, agreed completely. And you see how easy it was to come to consensus on that point?
What about the other question that has been posed as to what our output is actually going to be? Is it a design document? Is it a technical spec? Is it a at what level of detail do we get into? Any thoughts on that?
I think it's hard to commit to something specific this early, but having spoken about this now for a total of 5 minutes, I agree with the way Scott characterized it, and which is to say that there's going to be here's one way you can do it, here's another, pick your poison, and that sort of thing. Now, when it comes to how do we do the accreditation of the party making the request, it's hard for me to say whether that's going to be something I can have to vet or how that's all going to work. So I think it's hard to say at this point, but I like the way Scott characterized it so far.
Okay. One of the things that I think we ought to be very clear, and I'm hoping we can actually get to that in this call today, is I think we ought to put down when we do our work, before we start publishing things, et cetera, I think we ought to put down what are the assumptions that we're making so that we don't have questions later on about, but you thought this or you thought that. I think it'd be useful to put down assumptions. For example, one assumption might be that there is a unified access model. Another assumption might, and I'm just putting these out as thought bubbles rather than statements. Another assumption might be that the temporary specification is going to be replaced by something else, and the EPDP group is going to come up with whatever that result is. So in other words, we ought to say what are all the basic things that we don't have to debate internally and others don't have to question the credibility of our work as well. What do you folks think?
This is Steve Crocker. I think that's good. I think that's very good. I'm thinking it might also be helpful to lay out broad categories. So obviously access is the thing that we've just spent time talking about. What are the authorization process? In fact, let me subdivide access into the authorization versus within what the mechanism is for actually getting the data. So let's say those are two areas. Another area is data locality. That's a policy issue, and a question will arise as to whether or not the scheme that we put forth is going to satisfy the folks who have serious concerns about data locality. So that's a third area. And I'm just ticking these off as I think about them. It's not coming from an organized list. But a fourth area is what data is collected. And it's not our job to say what data is collected, but I think it is our job to be able to support whatever decisions are made about what data is collected. And somewhere buried in there, and I suspect it's a distinct area, is the distinctions as to you have data that's collected, you have different categories of people who can access data, and in between you have some people will be allowed to see some data, some people will be allowed to see other data. How much variation and how much nuances are we able to support within that possible set of possibilities? So those are categories of concerns that I think people will have, and that we should be able to say, very much in line with what you've said, Ram, what are our assumptions, and then maybe even flesh that out with here's what are goals are with respect to what we want to say about them, and also the complement of that, what are our non-goals, to use a terrible piece of vernacular, what are we not addressing or think is out of scope for us or not part of our concern.
Thanks, Steve. Very helpful. So can you help, can all of you here on the call help towards building up what the assumptions are? Is an assumption that RDAP is the model that is going to be used to access registration data? Should we make that an assumption?
I don't know of an alternative, so I'm currently assuming that.
Okay.
I think that's a perfectly reasonable assumption, but and I'll speak as a non-RDAP expert, because several RDAP experts are here. But as a matter of form, we should test whether or not the functionality or potential functionalities that might be needed are in fact supported by RDAP, and sketch, you know, just fill in the, connect the dots there so that it's do the homework before somebody else does it and discovers that there's something missing.
Scott, is your experience with RDAP been enough to answer that question?
Yes, Scott Hollenbeck here. So isn't enough? No. I mean, as it turns out, you know, we've been experimenting with some of these technologies over the course of ICANN's GTLD pilot program. So I'm actually quite confident that as we start poking at these questions a bit more, you know, we'll be able to come up with very solid, reasonable, you know, answers and proposals, you know, to deal with all of the questions that we're facing. I mean, and in terms of alternatives, I think, Murray, you nailed it. There aren't any more alternatives coming out of the IETF anyway. So you know, for better or for worse, this is what we've got in front of us right now.
Okay, so from the IETF perspective, when we chartered the working group that produced RDAP, there was quite a bit of resistance to doing even that, because previously there was a working group called CRISP that produced a series of documents meant to solve the WHOIS problem. That protocol was called IRIS, and it saw near zero adoption because, you know, whatever reasons. And so there was some resistance to doing this again. Why should we believe that whatever we produce this second time is going to get any traction? RDAP is actually getting the traction. So there's no reason for the IETF to get involved again and say, all right, we'll do a third thing. So, yeah, I agree with Scott. This is pretty much what we have to work with at the moment, unless the open source community comes up with some third thing.
Yeah, and Murray, I might disagree. When you say no need, if we identify a need to extend RDAP in any way, you know, there may be a need to write an internet draft, you know, or two or three or whatever, and then push that through the IETF process.
Sure. Yeah, I'm referring to, like, a brand-new effort because RDAP
right.
is discarded in its entirety.
This is Tomofumi. Isn't the numbers community already using RDAP?
Andy, are you there?
Yeah, this is Andy Newton. Yes, we are. All five RIRs have it, and we use it. We see increased usage every day, so yeah.
Yeah, it is adopted already.
Okay.
And
so,
just for one more piece of history, I think at some point ICANN contracted somebody, was it CNNIC, to produce an open source implementation. I don't know where that is, but if that was successful, then software availability is also not a limiting factor.
Yeah, this is Francisco. Sorry, someone trying to talk.
Yeah, go ahead, Francisco. Sorry.
Oh, just very quick. Murray, so that didn't pan out very well, so I'm afraid that is not available, but I know there are at least two RDAP server implementations available, one produced, by the way, by Jorge's team, another one by the DNS Bugs Young guys. So there are at least those two alternatives that have already been produced. And in terms of, just another point, in terms of RDAP adoption, I think Graham alluded to before, there is work already on the GTLD space towards RDAP adoption. We are at the moment working with the races and racers to finalize what we call another profile for the GTLDs that can be adopted. So there is already some work underway. Thanks.
Okay, so assumption number one, RDAP is a model used to access registration data. I don't see anybody objecting to that. What should be the second assumption that we put down?
I have a question for you, again, on the policy area. Will there be a single policy governing who can access what information, or might there be multiple policies depending upon what information we're talking about? And that may sound like a funny question, but one of the things driving it is we're talking about an ICANN effort here, and a uniform access model for the contracted parties. I know it's hard to imagine, but the ICANN space of contract parties is only one portion of the totality. What do other groups need, and to what extent can the work that we're doing be supportive of and compatible with the requirements in other jurisdictions and other kinds of registries, the CC community?
What do folks think? Benedict?
This is a kind of existential question. It's obviously actually challenged by some of the EPP, but it's a completely rational assumption. They want to proceed without it, even if it gets pushed back.
What I heard, Benedict, was existential question. Beyond that, all the rest went out of existence.
Okay, I'm sorry. On a train. This has actually been challenged at points on the EPDP. But I think it would be lunatic to proceed without assumption of commonality. So even if we get pushback, that's a strong assumption to start on. Thank you.
Steve, what I heard Benedict say, whatever you said was a strong assumption to start on. So, what were you proposing an assumption?
I was raising.
Were you proposing
a question,
perhaps
please.
that a unified access model will be in effect?
I was coming at it from a slightly different perspective of, do we want to anticipate that this uniform access model might be used by groups outside of the contracted parties, and if so, what stresses does that put on the need to support policies other than whatever policy comes up through the GNSO process? And that might be easy or it might be hard, and I just am suggesting that it's one of the things that we should look at and be clear about in our thinking and in our writing as to what scope that we're taking, and make that clear in our assumptions.
Got it. Thanks. So I'm just typing in a few of these into the chat. So assumption one, RDAP is a model used to access registration data. Two, a unified access model will be in effect.
Maybe Benedict could type his comment in.
Benedict has said no, it should be simpler. A standard model will apply equally to all contracted parties.
But what about the non-contracted parties?
So a standard model will apply equally to all parties. Murray says yes. Let me propose a third. The third that I'm proposing is all access will need to be authorized.
Well, here's a question then. I know the charter is for non-public data, but from a system point of view, that's a funny kind of line to draw in a way, in that one might view public data as just data which is accessed in the same way, but everyone is authorized to see it.
True. In some ways, all of this data is public. It's just public based on what your access rights are.
No, I wasn't. You can say that, but I was focused on a different thing, which is if we say all access is authorized, has to be authorized, it makes it sound like there's separate systems in effect for accessing control information which is restricted versus information which is not restricted, and I would think that we'd really, just from a cleanliness of design, really want one system. And if you have kind of the vacuous authorization, then you get whatever is available to everyone. And if you have, you know, stronger authorization, then you get more restricted access to more restricted data, rather than what would appear otherwise to be two completely distinct systems.
Okay. Would you like to propose something? A different language than what I had written?
The problem is I'm thinking, and when I'm thinking, I'm pacing, and so I wasn't reading.
No trouble. Why don't you think for a moment, and Francisco has his hand raised, and then we'll come back to you, Steve. Francisco.
Thank you, Ram. Oh, sorry. Should I go ahead, Ram?
Yes, please.
So on the to Steve, so that's what I was trying to highlight before. There is already work to make ARDA be the protocol to be used for accessing registration data in the EDLE space. That's why I think makes sense the assumption number one that we just agree on, which is that ARDA is what is going to be used for access to non-public data. That's why it makes sense that ARDA is the protocol to be used for access to non-public data, since there is already work to make it be the protocol to be used for public data. And to the chat, CCTLDs, Murray and Benedict, in ICANN space, the policy on CCTLDs is very limited in ICANN, and there is no mechanism to have obligations on CCTLDs to do this kind of thing. That's why this kind of work can only be focused on GTLDs. Of course, it can be made public, and maybe CCTLDs will adopt it, but there is no mechanism to make things happen on CCTLDs, at least not things like this. Thank you.
Okay.
One other quick point, if I can.
what about somebody who's just sitting on their Unix machine somewhere on the net who wants to issue a query? If we're talking about everybody needs to be authorized, does that fall into an authorization category that we might call anonymous, or do those connections simply not work? You have to be in the system and logged in by some definition of logged in before you can get any data at all.
Well, that goes to exactly the point that I was making before.
Murray, Scott Allenbeck here. Yeah, it's definitely a use case that needs to be considered, right? But as it turns out, there are technologies available. Some of what I did with the Federation stuff that I've got documented in Internet Draft actually accounts for browserless clients and the technologies available so that those clients can query RDAP either as an unauthenticated client or they can be authenticated. And, you know, an appropriate authorization model can be developed to account for both use cases.
Okay. Then this is just a terminology question, so I'm happy.
I think it's evident, even from this conversation, that we're at a relatively expert level. In order to explain this to a variety of readers, we may have to be much more explicit about these use cases.
Any proposals to modify my proposed third assumption, all access will need to be authorized?
I'm not seeing those words. What am I supposed to be looking at here on the screen?
It's in the chat box, Steve.
In the chat box. Oh, I see. There it is. All access need to be authorized. Choosing the right words is challenging me at the moment. I think if we're on the same page, I think, Ron, what we have in mind is that all accesses go through an authorization process, and that's a kind of hyper-technical statement that includes the potential that, depending upon what the access is, if it's for public information, then the authorization process is null or, you know, degenerate in that everybody gets authorized. And that is not a statement that is easily understood and consumed by a large population. But from a technical point of view, we're really talking about the limiting case in which the degree of authorization is nil. And you get what you get from that, which is only the information that's available publicly. So I think from a system design point of view and from a kind of architecture, you want some sort of gating function that says every access is subjected to scrutiny as to who you are and what it is you're going to get. And it includes the potential that anybody can have a certain class of information. Now, transforming all that into a statement that replaces what you've written is going to take a little more clarity than I have at this particular moment. But the question for you and for the group is this what we actually agree on, that there's kind of a uniformity of a gating function, and it includes that if you are an unknown or anonymous or arbitrary person, there's still stuff that you can get, and that fits into the model. Well, the silence suggests that I didn't make myself clear.
Now, it seems to me that perhaps in this group we're mixing authorization with authentication as well, at least looking at the chat transcript.
Yeah, so this is Andy. I understood what Steve said, and I agree.
there's no authentication if you don't have to be, if anybody is allowed to access certain class of information, public information, then the authentication process is negligible.
It's null, right?
No. Yes, less than negligible. Zero.
I like the term degenerate, actually.
That's who will be accessing the information. Oh, no, that's not what you meant.
No. So, I mean, I don't hear any disagreement in the conversation, but we are going to need to be very precise about what authentication and authorization mean and the fact that there is this potential for you have the trivial amount of authentication and authorization completed for querying the minimal amount of stuff that anybody can access. And then beyond that, it's gradated or restricted in some way. So, yes, we just need to be very clear on what we mean by those terms.
Thanks, Andy. Francisco?
Thank you, Ram. So what I mean is, as of today, there is a subset of data that is considered to be public, basically, that is accessible to anyone without the need to be authorized or authenticated. Everyone, by default, is authorized to get this data. That's what I mean by this public data. So I think for those set of data, there is no need to require the users to go through any authorization or authentication on a schema. They should just be able to access the data freely. Right, authorized by default, that's right. But what I'm trying to say is we should not be changing the way they access the data. It should work the way it works today, and we should not be changing that.
Thanks, Francisco. I don't think I heard that. What I thought I heard was that authorization is a kind of the general term, but underneath that, you know, for the case that you're talking about, where there is data that anybody can access without any bounds, that comes into the case of as Scott said, by default, or as Steve said, it's just the null case. There is no authorization. There is an authorization process, but the check comes in and says, for this piece of data, no credentials, nothing has to be done. It's you just have access to it.
But I hear Francisco saying something else, and I think it's an important item to understand and discuss. At the risk, Francisco, of putting words in your mouth, sort of in the spirit of if we really understood what you're saying, are you suggesting that the existing access methods through, say, port 43 and WHOIS will continue unchanged, and people who want the information that you can get that way will continue to be able to get it that way, as in contrast, to have the equivalent information available through this unified access mechanism?
So not exactly, Steve. I was not referring to the protocol, and thank you for asking, because I was not clear about that. I think the migration to the ARDA protocol is, like we have said before, it's something that is in the works. And there are other reasons why you want to migrate out of port 43, like internationalization, standardization, etc. So that's something that is in the way. So we should not. I don't think we need to address that. So what I mean, to clarify, is that RDAP should be the way to access public and non-public data, and to be more precise on what I mean by not changing how the public data is changed in RDAP, what I mean is, if you take a look at the charter, one of the things that Joran is asking us to consider is to have an schema in which ICANN is in the middle of the process for access to non-public data, and only for that. In that schema, ICANN will be responsible for authorizing every query that is for non-public data. And what I mean is the public data access should not change. So they don't need to talk. People that want the public data, they should just do whatever the current ARDA protocol says, so accessing the data directly from the contracted party, for example, without needing to talk to ICANN. But if they want access to non-public data, that's where the part that we need to work on and how to make ICANN be the gate to that access, if that makes sense.
This is very helpful. Now I understand the point that you're making. So that's a fairly interesting piece of architectural dialogue, if you will, discussion about the architecture. The picture that forms in my mind is, let's see if I can sketch this out in a clean way, that you have an authorization process that comes through ICANN and goes and then provides access out to other facilities that are not ICANN operated. And if you want only public data, you go out to those same parties and you get only the limited information, but you're not coming through an ICANN facility. So there's a distinction made in the architecture as to the portion that ICANN is directly operating, which, if I understand properly, we're talking about an authorization and authentication process, versus the actual query and response for the data itself, which is at a different set of facilities, if you will, or sort of architecturally a different part of the system.
Yes.
Now, if you have that as a picture, next question is, what is there to prevent, or maybe it's a feature, having other authentication and authorization processes parallel to ICANN's that go out and access the same systems, some of which may or may not choose to respond to queries that are authenticated by sources other than ICANN?
So I think that's a very good question. What I can say here is that my understanding of what Jordan is asking us to work on is the piece of the model where ICANN is the only party that authorizes access to the non-public data. I don't know what's the answer to your question about whether there will be other ways to access the data that do not go through ICANN. That's a question that goes beyond my pay grade, I guess.
Okay, well, maybe is better with some exchange of diagrams and text, and I won't attempt to push it further here, but you've helped, at least for me, crystallize an interesting picture that might be helpful.
Thanks. What I'm going to do now is I'm going to poll you. I'm going to go down this list here on Adobe Chat. I'm going to poll you for your thoughts on any other assumptions that we should be thinking about. And you'll find that I do this polling as a fairly regular thing. So you'll just have to get used to that style, I guess. So let me start with you, Francisco. What are the assumptions?
I think that what I mentioned before is the part where ICANN is the party that is authorizing all requests to non-public data in the GDLD space. I think that's an important assumption that we need to consider.
So ICANN is a party that authorizes access to non-public registration data in the GTLD space, so I should add that.
Yes.
Okay. Jorge?
No, I don't think I have anything to add at this moment.
Okay. Murray?
Seems like a good starting point to me.
All right. Scott?
Yeah, I've got nothing else coming to mind right now.
Okay. Steve?
I would want us to say something about what our assumptions are about the data that's there and what happens if there are choices made about changing that data. What happens if new roles or new fields or new types of information are either added or removed over a period of time, and to what extent we're anticipating that in our design and providing mechanisms for that to be managed smoothly.
What should I write?
Either for discussion amongst ourselves as to whether we want to do that, or if you want me to make a suggestion about what I would suggest, I would say we are assuming, this is an assumption, right? We are assuming that the set of fields, it's an overly specific word, but good enough for now, may change over time, and that the system has to be designed to accommodate additions or restrictions to the data set. So it's not a fixed set of the data today, but it might change over time.
So the system will accommodate changes to data set or data access. Is that a good summary of what you said?
Yeah, I was focused on the data sets, but of course the access might change too over time.
All right, thanks. Andy?
I don't think I have anything at the moment.
All right. Tomofumi.
So since this is a security service, I don't know how many credential issuers there's going to be, but they all need to adhere to some security policy. Not a policy in the sense of ICANN, but more like you have to use HSN if you're issuing certificates, or if you're issuing ID passwords, if you're going to become an identity provider, you have to protect the credentials in this way, that way, things like that.
So all credentials have to conform to what? To a security model?
Needs to be protected. In a reasonable way.
Okay.
Depending on what it is, it's going to be different. But I'm assuming that this group will come up with some definition of how credentials should be managed and protected.
Got it.
Well, in other words, if you want to become an identity provider, you need to be able to provide these kind of protections.
Right.
Can I comment on that? That opens up a very rich area there needs to be mechanisms for auditing and evaluating and enforcing these kinds of things.
Yep.
And and a halfway related separate thing is we need to be clear what our assumptions are on the quantitative side, both quantities of queries and response times.
Right. Well, so what I'm actually pretty good. Sorry, go ahead.
I'm sorry. This is talking to me. What I'm trying to avoid is, like, if you get this from this identity provider, it's extremely easy to get a credential. And, like, bad players just go there and get a credential and get access. That's what I'm trying to avoid. Or have the credential compromised. Yeah. It'll defeat the purpose of having a mechanism.
And we can come at it from the point of view of there's likely to be, let's just call it variations in the performance of these various providers, and the system has to have the hooks in it so that policy people can say, well, we need to impose some rules or we need to take some action, and not have a system which says, well, once you're a provider, you're always a provider and there's no way to do anything about it.
Okay, this takes us to a really good spot. Benedict, I didn't come to you. Do you have any assumptions that you'd like to add?
Have you come out of the tunnel yet?
I wonder if, hopefully you'll be able to hear me a little bit better.
I wonder
if we should or could say something. Not much better?
No, yeah. Much better, I say.
Much better, wonderful. I wonder if we should or could say something about we explicitly assume that port 43 access will be turned off in the future. So as well as implicitly saying endpoint one, the RDAP is the expected mechanism going forward, do we also say, add to that as a coder, we are expecting that port 43 will be deprecated at some point?
What do folks
deprecated
think?
And turned off are two different things.
Okay. Tell me what you think it should be.
Deprecated is fine with me.
Deprecated is fine. I don't know that we can assume that port 43 is going to get turned off.
I think I've been operating on the assumption that 443 has been deprecated for a while, so I hadn't even thought about it until someone just mentioned it the last few minutes.
You should talk to registrars. There are many who will swear solely by port 43.
We use it very heavily from the operational perspective.
I don't mean to sound like I'm insensitive to how long it takes to turn off an old service. It's just funny to hear it come up this late in the conversation, that's all.
Well, I think we're all agreed that it will. That what we're talking about will supersede the existing service, and it's only a question of the precise dynamics of that.
Okay, so I just edited assumption one, added Benedict's point in there. So I think we've got five assumptions. We'll put that into the Google Drive, and we can mull over this again. As we go on, but I think this is a fairly good start. Can I turn our attention to the charter document, which is, it says draft charter, and in there I want to skip past the purpose and the background sections, which are really more intended for external use, and I wanted to take our attention to the five categories that we'd come up with in our discussions inside, with Francisco, John, and myself. We'd said that we should, as a group, consider questions in these five areas, assessment of available tools and protocols, authentication, authorization, data transport, storage, and audit, access control protocol, as well as performance requirements. And then there are questions underneath that. There are about, I think, just short of 20 questions that are in there. Then there are other key issues for discussion as well in this document that covers transparency, assignment of responsibility, error conditions, accounting, cost billing, maintenance and evolution, governance, and multi-use requests. I'd like to open this up for your, and in the Adobe Connect, you can scroll through this document go to it directly yourself. But it would be useful to have a discussion here and really see if we can agree on what we're going to say here, because eventually we'll have to make some version of this document available for public access so that people know what we're doing. I think it's useful to have some discussion as well as making sure that the right words we have are the right words. Steve?
Yes. Thank you for rolling through those five categories. As you went through them, I was focused on the issue I'd raised before. Is there a description anywhere of what data is actually being collected? And is there a mechanism or part of the system for describing those? And as I was alluding to before, anticipation that set of fields might change over a period of time. So I see the transport, I see the access and so forth, but I don't see, at least on quick reading, anything that says, and by the way, here is the data that we're talking about, the description of that data is over here in this schema, and all of this is as of a certain date and version, and there's a process for modifying that, adding or subtracting or changing those.
What do folks think?
So just to stimulate the folks who've not heard me on this topic before, let me give both a positive and negative example. A positive example of some information that might need to be added or desire to be added is who is the designated third party or multiple third party DNS providers for a particular domain name. There's no visibility of that in the who is today and in the registration process, but and that's a potential stumbling block for options like updating DS records. So that's on one side where you might want to add information, and on the other side, it's questionable what the real meanings of admin and tech contact are. One could imagine deprecating those. Or I guess admin has acquired some meanings, but tech contact is not so much. So one could imagine phasing those out or replacing them with things that have more specific and better defined meanings. Those are examples to underpin my comment about the definition of the data that's being collected might need to change over time, and that's separate from who gets access to that information.
So, Steve, I think if I understand what you're saying, the solution we should work on should be should allow for some other efforts, like perhaps the EPP policy, that is, to decide what to add or remove fields that they choose to do so. And in other words, the solution we come up with should not have any assumptions on what are the fields that are public or non-public. Is that what you are saying?
Close. What I'm concerned about is if we say nothing, then it may be understood and have the implied effect that only the fields that are currently defined are the ones that can ever be in the system. What I'm suggesting is that we want to explicitly address the notion that there might be changes to that set of fields. But I agree with you that such choices, if they're ever made, would have to be made outside of us. But I think it's within scope for us to provide the mechanism for that to happen.
Right. Isn't that already considered in assumption number 4? The system will accommodate changes to that sets or data access. I think that's how it's formulated at the moment.
Well, that talks about access, but the question in my mind is, does it also include the fact that that information, there might be changes to what information is acquired? The access control protocol says there's a bunch of data there, and we'll check to see who you are and whether you're authorized to get that data. I'm on the a step before that of what information is actually collected, and it doesn't do any good to try to access information that doesn't exist. And in a lesser extent, it's not too useful to collect information which is useless.
Right. We should not make assumptions in this solution for what is collected and what is available to access, either public or non public or non-public access. Right. The solution should be should accommodate for those data fields to evolve over time as the policy or some other efforts
so,
come up with their purpose for that.
Good. And where, Francisco, in this list, is there language which addresses that?
So it could be the assumption number 4, but if that does not address the issue, we should either change it or add one more, whatever works.
By assumption number 4, you're talking about the access control protocol?
I think so far, number 4 says system will accommodate changes to data sets or data access.
Oh, so I'm not reading where you're reading, but that sounds good. That's not in the charter, right?
It's not in the charter.
Oh,
Steve.
Yes.
These are the 5 assumptions that we've
okay.
kind of discussed so far and agreed upon.
Then my apologies.
Okay, Scott?
Sure, so in looking at these, 4 of them look like I feel pretty comfortable with, but in looking at the access control protocol questions here, it's in itself making an assumption about, you know, ICANN being a central authority for doing certain things. And I realize, I mean, I'm not exactly plugged into ongoing policy work and, you know, what might be going on with the temp spec and things like that. But this presumes a very specific operating model. How did this all come to be?
So, Scott, I wrote that because I began with an assumption that there is going to be a unified access model and that unified access model was going to be administered by ICANN.
Let me try to add to what you said, Ron. So, Scott, as I understand it, the key political thing that's driving this is, political/legal, is a very strong concern about liability. And I think, if I understand, I have not had this direct conversation, but I believe that the point of view that Jorn is taking is ICANN will protect the registrars, and to the extent that they're involved, also the registries, by being the point of access and thereby being the focal point for liability of if there are abuses. And it will do so by being, I think, and I apologize if I'm getting this wrong, by being the operator that mediates those accesses. Now, in line with what I've said before and what I think Francisco responded on, this is limited to accesses to information in the GTLD space and limited to access that is non-public. So from an architectural point of view, I think what you're seeing is correct with respect to access to non-public information in the GTLDs, and that was what triggered my comment about one could imagine other gateways for other classes of information, like to ccTLDs, which might be part of this overall architecture, but the actual accesses might not go through the ICANN process if it didn't require access to GTLD information.
Okay, may I add something?
Please.
Sorry, I'm not able to raise my hand right now in the chat. There's been a misunderstanding of GDPR persisted within ICANN Legal. And the misunderstanding is essentially that ICANN Legal have believed that a data controller, so that's the entity that determines what data is processed, collected, publicized, etc., has to physically hold and handle that data. There is nothing, in fact, in GDPR that says that body, the controller, must ever touch the data. So a system, which my understanding that RDAP is designed for, that will allow ICANN to issue authorization tokens, but never have the data pass through ICANN servers or systems, but simply be passed from registrar or registry to data supplicant, is perfectly legal under GDPR. So ICANN can authorize it and be a controller, which reduces the legal liability without it ever physically going through ICANN systems.
So, Ram, what has been your understanding of the mission? Does the design that we're charged with have to include ICANN operation of the access mechanisms and transport of the data in order to satisfy ICANN's understanding of its obligation or what it has to do in order to protect the registrars and registries, or is it more open-ended than that?
Look, when Yaron came to me and spoke to me about this, I think his assumption coming in was that ICANN was going to be the operator and was going to be the party that was going to be working on all of these, this part of it anyway, the access control and how to ensure that people get access to data. That was my understanding coming into this entire process.
Well, at the very least, in concert with Benedict, we should be clear about that assumption. And one could go a little further and put that assumption up to a test early. And I could imagine at least three possible outcomes. One is that the assumption stands. Another is that it doesn't. And the third is that we proceed in a kind of open-ended way where it can be done either way, and we're simply clear about that, and then that decision gets made later.
Right. Elisa, did you want to chime in on this topic as well?
Hi, Ram. Yes, thank you. So to give a little bit of context again about where this group came from, when ICANN began working on developing a unified access model, our goal has always been to see what is possible legally under the GDPR, depending on what recommendations the community ultimately comes up with. The framework that we published back in, I think it was June, before the whatever meeting was in June, Panama, excuse me, and the iterations of that followed in the following months were to develop a framework for how such a model might work in a legal way in response to policy recommendations. The idea that this group has been asked to think through and develop technically has to do with an interface or a technical solution, for lack of a better term, that would put ICANN at the heart of all requests for non-public access data. So getting back to Scott's point related to number four here under the access control protocol, I'm sorry, the all of these basically, under access control protocol. So this group's work is predicated on an assumption that ICANN would be at the center of a unified access model, or whatever we call it, and that whether we can design something where by being at the heart of this and demonstrating how technically that would work, if it would, in fact, as Steve was noting, lift any of the liability or risks for the contracted parties who would ultimately have to implement this model. I hope that's clear, but I'm happy to answer any questions.
And to be clear, when you say at the heart, my understanding is that the driving purpose of that is to be at the heart from a legal perspective. Is that the same sort of intimately interbound with, therefore, also at the heart operationally?
Yes, I think so. The idea is that ICANN would be granting access to or lifting the gate. I'm sorry, I'm not a technical person, to the data that right now is redacted in the WHOIS.
Right. So I think what you're hearing from some of us is that it's conceptually possible for ICANN to be at the heart of this from a legal perspective. Set the rules and enforce them, but for the actual operation of the systems to on a transaction-by-transaction basis does not need to be operated by or go through ICANN's own facilities. That may be different from what you're expecting, and I think at least within the confines of this conversation, that's a question that is being raised.
Steve, yes, Scott here, and if I may, the reason this caught my attention is, you know, those of you who recall the work of the expert working group from a few years ago and the report that we produced may recall that, you know, a centralized model like this, you know, was one of the key out of the recommendations that came out of that. And you may also recall that that recommendation was widely panned by the community. And so I'm somewhat concerned that, you know, we're taking a concept that was, you know, fairly clearly rejected by the community and starting with that as an operating assumption. I don't want something like that to doom us to failure before we even get started.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some newly released software that can take a transcript of this and translate it into the terms that are more likely to be actually used. With much higher volume and intensity.
Scott, can you? What working group was that? Wasn't an IETF working group, right?
No. This was a group that was convened by FADI. What was this? Vintage 20.
At the direction of the board, actually.
2012.
Yes. Yes. Thank you. So, I mean, Steve, I think you were actually board chair at the time, right?
And a strong driver of it, too, a strong driver of this action. Right. So, yeah, we might want to be careful about – go ahead.
So I just wanted to clarify something. Oh,
yeah,
sorry.
Francisco.
Yeah, I just wanted to clarify something. Scott, I believe the model that report included was different to what we are talking here. If memory is good here, I believe what they were talking about was a model in which the data is held by a party. All the data is held by a party, and that party is the one that is the only one that provides access. That is not what we're discussing here. We're not talking about changing how collection works. It's only about the access to non-public data to be to have one gate, and that's all what this is about. And to Steve's question before about the making the differentiation between the legal part and the operational part. I think you're right, Steve. I think what we are saying is that ICANN would be the party ultimately responsible for authorizing the request, whether that's done by staff or subcontracted to someone, but still, it will still be the responsibility of ICANN to assume that legal responsibility or whatever is the right legal term.
Francisco, if I may, you're absolutely correct. If you go back and read the EWG report, it was not just centralized access, but centralized storage. But yet when I read, how could a centralized access interface work, right? I'm seeing what I would describe as lightning rod words.
Right.
And I think we have to be prepared, to ensure that this is a good starting point.
Let me offer a piece of insight. I've heard the term non-public data emphasized, and I have the sense that it's being emphasized as if that is going to be the lesser part of the access to the data. I think we should be clear about our assumption there. My feeling is that one should design this as if that is the dominant form of access. Not that there shouldn't be any public access and not that it won't be fairly substantial, but I don't know what the assumptions are that are implicit in everyone's thinking, but I would counsel that the non-public access is going to be a very, very large fraction, high volume, high demand, and has to be built very, very strong and robust.
Okay. So then what we should do is we should
going to have a heavy load.
Right. So what we should do is, and Elisa, perhaps on the access control protocol in the Google Docs version anyway, I think we ought to highlight that with the comments that have come through here on this call, because we've got some more discussion to be done in that area. Let me come to you, Benedict. Benedict, do you have a hand up? Is that an old hand?
I do. No, it isn't. So a couple of learnings from the EPDP, that there's been quite a lot of updated thinking informed by sort of German privacy experts in particular. So in terms of lightning words, centralized would probably be better phrased as decentralized. So thinking about what's often described as a hub and spoke model where ICANN authorizes, but the data is delivered from nodes, which RDAP allows for. That would be a good way. That would be one good way to think about framing this, or maybe, as Steve's proposed, at least allowing ourselves the flexibility in the language there in point one under access control protocol. Under number two, non-public registration data is a deprecated phrase in our terms. And we've been thinking it's not a helpful distinction because it sort of draws on the idea of doing what's happening so far. So we've been thinking in terms of personal data, simply personal data. There's no need to because we will use the profile, the RDAP profile, to distinguish which level of authorization gets access to which data set, and those need not necessarily be hierarchical. Right. So let's just talk about personal data be securely transferred from registries and registrars to third parties. There's no need to say via ICANN there, or one could say perhaps brokered by ICANN or under the auspices of ICANN. But it needs to make clear that it's not guaranteed or not required that the data physically travel via ICANN. Thanks.
Gotcha. we're not going to have.
Sorry.
Go ahead, Delisa.
I'm sorry. I just have a quick question on the point that Benedict just raised. The phrase personal data is very specific, I think, and may have legal meaning. We've used non-public. We could use something else, but it's just to indicate whatever data we've chosen not to make accessible to anyone. So I just
thank you.
Maybe I missed your point. So thanks.
That's a very good point, and maybe as a way of keeping that idea in mind, I can well imagine that some registrant might want the expiration date not to be visible, and that's a policy question that doesn't involve personal information. Just as an example to stimulate that line of thought.
Okay. Steve, you have your hand up. Did you have something else you wanted to say?
No, my hand is numb. I don't know. I'm sorry. That must be left over.
Okay, got it. Thanks. We're about 6 minutes in, and as is the case with these things, we are just getting, you know, kind of deeper into the topic, but I do want to close our call on time. What I'd like to do is there is an email list that has been set up, right, Diana?
Yes, Ron, there has been. Everybody should have been added.
So what would help, Diana, is if you could send just a quick note saying this is the email list so everybody gets that email and then they know they can hit reply or save the address and they'll know, you know, how to write. I think that will be helpful. And then Murray asked, should there be a – he would love to see a glossary of these terms, and I'd asked, should it be ICANN? And Elisa says yes to it, so it's a pretty good starting point. And I'm wondering, Elisa, if in addition to taking that on, you can also assign yourself a timeline for it so that we'll, you know, you can set our expectations as to when we can see that. So I think we are at the useful end of this conversation. Let me turn to you, Diana, for what actions you've recorded out of today's meeting. And I think Diana is just leaving. So, Elisa,
yeah,
do you want to speak to it?
Yeah, this is Diana. So far, the actions that I have is to create a doodle poll for alternate dates in January and February for the face-to-face meetings, as well as what you just identified, sending the email out to the email list, letting them know this is the list, and then Elisa will be working on the glossary of terms.
Okay. One other thing that I forgot to mention on the call, the plan is that our email on the group will get archived publicly, so it will be accessible publicly. So we're not making these recordings public, but we're making the email archives public. At least that's what my initial thinking is. If any of you think that's a bad idea, please speak up or you know, send me an email offline. We've got the assumptions. I think, Elisa, we need to start up, you know, that in a kind of maybe add it. I don't know if you add it to the charter document. Maybe that's the right place for it to go. So it goes ahead of the key questions we have, key assumptions or something like that. And I'm expecting that next week in our call we can go through the rest of these questions that are there and have a proper discussion. And hopefully at the end of our call next week we'll have some level of understanding and hopefully agreement on what we want to work on. And then we can start to dig deeper into those pieces directly. Are there any questions on this plan? Okay, I don't hear any questions. So with that, let's close the call. We plan to meet at the same time, 1700 UTC, on the next Tuesday, which will be the 18th of December, and that will be the last meeting for the year. Thanks, everyone.
And
thank you.
Doodle poll for travel dates to discuss.
Yes.
Show up as
yes.
Well.
Diana's going to send that doodle poll out.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye.